as I mentioned, your wife passed away recently, and once again, we extend our condolences, but we're always interested in a man's better half, so tell us a little bit about your wife and how she was involved in your ministry, and tell us a little bit about your family, your kids. People in Alabama, people like to know those things about your people, so...
Let me apologize to you, Andrew. I apologize because I should have greeted you and tell you that Nigeria greets you. And Bukuru Diocese specifically. I didn't do that before I began my sermon. What Nigeria greets you. Bukuru Diocese greets you. Esther, who is the only girl I have, greets you. I have a Barnabas, they greet you. I have a Daniel and I have a Joshua. There are four kids in the family. Lois was a pillar of my ministry. She was very strong, a backbone to me, because she leads the women in the whole diocese of about 10,000 people before persecution reduced us to half that population. So she would organize meetings with the women, organize conferences with the men, organize programs, you know, Bible studies, and workshops for the women. That was Lois's ministry. Okay, well. So she was, and would go with me wherever I was invited for a program or for other meetings outside of our diocese.
Okay, well, Lois sounds like a wonderful woman, wonderful preacher's wife,
I appreciate that.
Well, thank God. So any of your kids married, the four?
No, my kids, none of them is married yet.
Okay.
They're all at home with me. That's what we are like in Nigeria. They live with us. The first one is 28 years old, but he still lives with me. The second is a girl who is Esther. She is 25. She still lives with us. Daniel is at home. Joshua is at home. All of them are home.
Okay.
None of them is married yet, so I don't have any grandchild yet.
Okay, good. Well, give us just a brief history of Christianity in Nigeria. You mentioned in your sermon, you mentioned the coming of missionaries from England,
and I
understand that there are parts of Nigeria, you know, Lagos, where there are huge churches, I mean, tens of thousands of people, and so kind of give us a history and maybe a summary of where you think the Nigerian church is, if you can kind of paint with a broad brush.
Okay, well, Nigeria is a multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multi-religious country. We are supposed to be practicing democracy in Nigeria, but it will seem as if we are not doing it the way the U.S. is doing it. We have all of the structures, you know, physically. The president is there, the Senate is there, the House of Representatives is there. But a lot of corruption goes on everywhere, and things are not working the way they should. Concerning Christianity, we have many Christian denominations in Nigeria. The Presbyterian is there. We have the Presbyterian Church there. We have the Anglican. We have the Catholics. We have what we call Equa and many other denominations, so many of them. Methodist is there. At the Anglican, where I belong, it's a church of up to 20 million people in Nigeria, because Nigeria is a huge country. The population of Nigeria is about 200 million. So when we have 20 million, it's like, it's not much yet. So the Anglican Church in Nigeria, it's a congregation of about 20 million, and it's hugely, strictly conservative. It's fought the West over the gay issue very badly. In fact, we have severe relationship with the Episcopal Church and the Church of England. We are not in any relationship communion with them, no.
Wow.
Because of that. So it's hugely, hugely conservative. We don't ordain women, you know. I mean, even the women wouldn't subscribe to them being ordained. But the church, over the years, like I said, the CMS came to my own part of the world, my real locality, in the year 1907. That was when they got
1907?
1907.
Okay.
So it's not... But other parts of Nigeria, like Lagos area, you talked about, had, you know, a touch of the Christianity long before then. Now, but in my own area, it was the CMS, the Anglicans, that evangelized that part of the country. And so we still have practices that are Anglican, though other denominations have come in, have arisen out of that. But, you know, but the church in Nigeria, yes, as it's huge. No doubt about that. But Nigeria, it's a country that is big by size, and from the central north, I mean, the central part of Nigeria to the northern part of it, persecution has been there for persistently now, consistently, for in the past 10 years. We've been persecuted consistently. In fact, so many pastors and their wives have lost their lives as a result. So many Christians have lost their lives as a result. So many Christians, some had to trek hundreds of kilometers from Nigeria to Cameroon so that they could have their lives saved because of the attack, persecution, you know, brought on them. And so we live in a situation where sometimes you're not too sure what will happen to you. The church is suffering in that part of the world, really suffering. Suffering because of Boko Haram, because of Fulani militia. These are nomadic herd men, you know, who go about grazing their cows from place to place. You know, they have constituted themselves into a militia that can unleash mayhem on people, kill people, sack them from their homes and their villages, and they take over the place just to graze their cows. But the church is still, you know, Christians are still, you know, the more people are persecuted, the stronger their faith becomes. We still are, occasionally when there's a window of peace, we move out to evangelize, you know, and to even plant churches, you know. So the church in Nigeria is suffering, but it's alive.
But it sounds like from what you said, the experience of being a Christian in the north versus the south could be very different.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay. Yes, then the southern part of Nigeria is peaceful. And I told Larry just yesterday or 2 days back that, you know, it's surprising that he had come from America to see me. And no bishop in Nigeria. I am a bishop. And we have 167 of them in Nigeria, Anglican bishops. None of them has thought it wise to just pay a visit on us. They fear to come to our own part of the country because of persecution. Now, so when you people in the West fear to come, I mean, we don't have anything against you for that, because we need to be alive to do just anything else. If we die, we can do nothing. Now, so when you fear to come to Nigeria, we should not have a grudge against you, because you are right to fear for your lives. Even our neighbors, our own brothers who are right around us will fear to come to us. Then you have every right to fear to get there, because it's a longer distance and it's a more strange situation to you than it should be to them. So they are at peace and are prospering. They are doing well in their own way. But I tell you that we have more courage to face, you know, the enemy as far as the gospel is concerned than they do. Because if they had any, they would have come to join us to fight.
Well, let me ask you another question. You mentioned and alluded to some of the terrible things you've seen, this constant pressure and persecution. What does it look like to follow Christ's commands to love your enemies in your setting? I mean, for us, I mean, we have enemies, but it would tend to be minor things compared to your situation. It might be, you know, enemies in someone's own household, some criticisms or school or work, but how do you, as a pastor, counsel your people to love their enemies in the setting that you're in? What does that look like, practically speaking?
Yeah. I mean, that's a very difficult thing to do, but we don't have an option. The truth is that we still love these people who persecute us. You have the opportunity, you do the good you must do for them. You know, you are mindful of the fact that they are suffering needs too, and where you have the means, you meet their needs. We still encourage our followers, I mean members of our churches, to love these people. We encourage them. It's a difficult thing to do because when they kill your father, they kill your mother, or they kill your brother, or they kill your child, or your daughter or your son, it's not easy for you to still love them. It's not an easy thing to do. But we still encourage our members to love them, difficult as it is. Sometimes members will frown at you. They will feel very, very uncomfortable with such, you know, suggestions. But it's still the best I can do because that's what Christ, you know, the Bible teaches us. Love your enemies. Give them water to drink when they are thirsty. Give them food to eat when they're hungry, you know, so that, you know, you can be piling some burning coals under them at the end of the day. Or we still are encouraging them. We ask them to live peacefully with them. We ask them to still treat them as people who need salvation. You know, it may be difficult for you to convince a Muslim to convert to Christianity, you know, but they are so subtle. In fact, what they do today is that they find Christian girls and marry them, and they make them Muslims at the end of the day. Sometimes they steal them. In some locations, you know, the traditional, you know, rulers are so powerful that they could just take a Christian girl and hand it over to somebody and said, she has become a Muslim by way of marriage. You know, well, we still are encouraging our members to love them. That's the truth. We visit them where we can. We attend to them medically where we can. You know, we interact with them and do the things that we need to do with them. In fact, sometimes we organize peace parties with them. That's what we do.
Well, let me ask you another question, and let me set this question up. This is going to be a little bit longer. I read recently an article, I think it was 2 weeks ago, on National Review that said that in 2003, there were 1.5 million Christians in Iraq. Today, there are 250,000. And so the Christian community in Iraq, which has been there for centuries, is being decimated. And this article was anticipating a time when there'll be virtually no historic Christian witness in Iraq. You know, you've mentioned and experienced a similar thing in your part of the world. You said from 10,000 members in your diocese down to 5,000. So my question is, how do you reconcile these sorts of experiences in the world where a thriving Christian church is crushed, dispersed, where sometimes witness is virtually silenced in a place? How do you reconcile that with the prophecies in Scripture that, especially in the Old Testament prophets, that speak of the mountain of the Lord being established and all the nations streaming to it, David's tent being expanded, the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. How do you reconcile in your mind those great kind of expansive promises of the growth of Christ's kingdom with this painful reality that we sometimes see where it seems that his church is crushed and dispersed and almost silenced?
Well, if that's the word of God, then we know that the Lord is, Lord God Almighty is sovereign.
Hey, you sound like a Presbyterian. That's
good. He is a sovereign God, and he sees into the future that you and I cannot see. I don't think that persecution implies a total, you know, extermination. God will always, through the Scriptures, we are made to understand that God will always preserve a righteous seed for himself. You know? Now, so the fact of what prophecy you have just, you know, narrated coming to pass, we can't doubt that. Because it remains, you know, for God to know how to do it at the end of the day. Meanwhile, you and I who are living must stand persecution, must still commend the gospel of Christ to the world, even in the midst of our suffering, or in the midst of your comfort. We must still commend the gospel of Christ to the world out there. I give you a story. I shared with Larry. A friend of mine came and was telling me he was working in the bank in Nigeria, and you know, he was in the position of his own office was one that will be converting the Nigerian naira into dollar, to pound sterling, to euro. So people travel. You know, I came to America, I needed dollar. His office was the one to do the conversion for me. So a Muslim, a very big Muslim man, highly placed Muslim, you know, encountered him over time. Then one day the man called him from his house and told him that he wanted to see him. He said, no, I would rather come to see you. He said, no, it's me that will come to see you. I want to see you. He insisted, but the man also insisted. So he said, okay, come over. I am in the office. Come and meet me in the office. When he got there, he said to him, over the years, I have transacted this kind of, you know, I have met people in your office who have done this kind of business for me. But since I began doing this with you, I notice you've never cheated me in any way. Why is that so? And he said to him, you know what? If you had met me years back, I would have cheated you. But what has made a difference in my life now is Christ. Christ has made a difference in my life. And he said, and the Muslim, a real Muslim, called Muslim from Kano. Kano is one of the seats of Islamic things in Nigeria. The Muslim said to him, I believe this is your Christ. This is your Christ thing is true. It's true. You know, but my feet have already gone too far. In other words, he's too deep in Islam and can't come out of it now because he will not even be saved. They will kill him. He was the secretary to the Emirate Council, the whole Emirate Council in Kano. You know. Now, so what are we saying? The fact that we continue to commend the gospel to the world. The world gets, you know, infected by the gospel. It gets an attraction to the gospel. You know, this man, you may have maybe 1,001 of such people who are Christians at heart, but environment will not let them practice like Nicodemus. Right? Now, so it means then that God has a way of, you know, growing his church. Not sometimes you may know the church, maybe not be the church militant, the one you and I see. There may be a secret church like in the days of Elijah. Elijah said he was the only one living. But God pointed out to him that, look, there are 1,000 more people, you know, more than you, who are alive for the sake of the gospel, who have never sold their hands. Now, so it means then that the prophecy, look, if Christianity were to finish, it would have been finished, I think so.
Oh, that's a good point.
Okay. Thank you.
Good, thanks. Well, those were all my questions. We've got time for a few more. Anybody want to direct any to Pastor Zumbays? Lynn? She said, what is the percentage of Christian versus Muslim in Nigeria?
All right. Now, you know, that's a big tussle between the Christians and the Muslims. We believe that we are slightly more than the Muslims in number. That we are some 53 or so percent of the whole population of Nigeria, and that the Muslims are around 47 or so, you know, of the population. So it's almost a half-half situation.
Okay. Julie?
Okay, my daily routine.
Let me repeat the question. Julie asks what Pastor Zumbe's daily routine is. Now, my routine, I only work one day a week.
Oh, you work one day a week.
So he probably works more, but go ahead and tell us your daily routine.
Actually, my routine it's a daily routine that every day I need to be in my office. At the church, where I attend to people, as many as will come to see me. Some of them will include counseling them. Others will come, you know, to discuss other issues with them. You know, sometimes it's marriage problems, you know, and people come to have solution from you as the leader of the church. And then I teach. Normally I will teach or preach twice in a week. There is a chapel that takes place, holds in my house on Tuesday. And every day, I celebrate. Every Tuesday, I celebrate communion with people who come there. Every Tuesday of the week. And then on Sundays, I am preaching. I also do what we call confirmation in the Anglican Church. Mm-hmm. You know, move from place, but I don't know whether Presbyterian do confirmation. Mm-hmm. Do you do that?
We have something like that.
Okay.
We call it communicants class.
Okay, yes. So, you know, I do all of that. Quarterly, I do a one-day retreat with the whole of my clergy and their wives. Okay. Every quarter.
Every quarter, you said?
Yeah, every quarter. Every quarter. Every month.
Oh, every month, a retreat.
Yeah, every month. Every quarter. That is every quarter. Then with my leaders, every month I meet with them. The leaders in the diocese. Every month I meet with them. Every first Tuesday of the month, I meet with the leaders. You know, the leading pastors in the various locations where I oversee as a diocese.
Do they come to you, or do you go to them?
No. We meet at a point.
We
have a place where we meet. Okay. Yeah. Within the year, I take a visit of the churches, move around from place to place, seeing what the churches are going through.
Anyone else? Dave Osmond. Dave asked if there's a problem with corruption in church leadership in Nigeria.
Oh, yes. That's true. When everyone, sets up their church, a lot of proliferation, church just springing up every nook and cranny of the country. And so when there's a lot of a proliferation of churches, then suddenly you know that they are not intended for souls. A good number of those people are about themselves and not about the souls of men. That is true. There are people who are not really for the gospel. They're after how to make money out of the gospel. So there is.
Let me ask a follow-up question to that, something that Dave prompted. Have you seen in Nigeria the same attraction to the health and wealth gospel, whatever you want to call it, the word faith movement, as we have here?
A lot of prosperity gospel goes on in
prosperity
Nigeria.
Prosperity gospel.
Yeah, a lot of it goes on in Nigeria. You know, especially if you are not a mainliner, maybe like the Presbyterian Church here. You are the founder and the overseer of your church. So you do whatever you want to do. You raise all the money, spend all the money. Sometimes you don't account the church in any way. In fact, most times, it becomes a personal business so that sometimes, in some cases, when the man dies, the woman takes over as the leader of the church. That's what we see happening in Nigeria. That's just it. Yeah? Oh, okay.
She's going to be ready. All right, take the reins.
All right, that's good. She's getting
all right,
ready.
Anyone else? Yes, Susan.
What happens to the children who are orphaned by the conflict, and are there things that they need that we could help provide?
Susan wants to know what happens to children who are orphaned in the conflict in Juwan's area, and are there things we could provide?
Well, that's true. A number of them are homeless. I was telling Laurie a couple of days back, there are still some of these people in refugee camps until today. Lois had desired that she would, come up with an orphanage where the children would be cared for. Her ill health was protracted. It took quite a long time until she eventually died. That affected her vision. But certainly, there are so many needy kids around. No father, no mother, they just are the chance of any good-hearted people. At the mercy of good-hearted people.
Anyone else? Mike, what's your question?
I think it's milder now. It's not as bad as it used to be. It may still be there, but it's not anything anybody talked about much today. It's not as bad as it used to be. No, it's not.
Okay. Sure. Yes, Mike.
Yeah. Yes.
The question was, do your Anglican churches preach in English?
Yes, they do. They preach in English.
Okay.
I mean, you know, where you have, Nigeria has over 400 languages.
Hmm.
Yeah. Tiny, tiny little, you know, ethnic nationalities all over the place. Now, so there are instances where you preach in the local dialect of the people. But in a setting like yours here, it's English. In my cathedral, it's English. That's what we use predominantly. Larry preached there when he came, and I preach in English. So, if you know that the official language in Nigeria is English, that's the language of governance in Nigeria. Our schools are taught in English, all over. So it's English, predominantly.
Anyone else? Yes, Rick.
The Christians in the South are more prominent
than the Christians in the North, as far as those are concerned. Does the Southern Christian church come and help the Northern Christian church? Did y'all hear that question? Rick said, do the Christians in the south of Nigeria, where Christianity is quite large and expansive and not as persecuted, do they come north and help the northern church?
Yep, well, sometimes they do. Other times they don't.
Sometimes, you said?
Sometimes, yes. Okay. Sometimes they do. You know, individual churches do occasionally, but not always.
And you mentioned earlier that even some of your fellow bishops are too nervous to come north.
Oh, yeah. Some, in fact, they fear to come to that part of the country, right. To be honest. They fear. They think it's just, you can't just walk through, but that's the truth. That's the case. Like, it's not safe for you to just, you don't know, you know, which way is safe as you walk around. Is that a hand over there?
Who was the? Oh, that she was fixing her hair. Oh,
see a hand there.
Who is that there? Evelyn, it's Evelyn. Is your hair darker than usual? Okay, looks different from here. Okay, Evelyn, what's your question? What was that? Evelyn wants to know what kind of food you have in Nigeria.
Oh, what kind of food we have in Nigeria? We don't have American food in Nigeria. Now we the ones you know, we have potatoes, you know, potatoes. Okay, we have yam. Yeah, we have rice. We have beans. You know beans?
Yes.
All right. We have corn. We have other grains. Millet, you know, name all of those. Those are what we have in Nigeria.
So the basics.
Yeah, they're the basics.
Yes. Anyone else? Liz, Lynn? Lynn was asking about a particular item in the news a while back about a Christian girls' school that was attacked. Girls were kidnapped, and she wanted to know if you knew about that and if any of those girls have returned.
Some of them did return about 3 years back. Others, until today, we don't know where they are. They have not returned. That is typically what has happened, in the past 10 years consistently. They will invade villages, kill some, abduct some, especially the women, and never to bring them back. They suck people from the whole of their villages, leave them empty. Those girls, some of them, I think about half of them, have not come back until today. And yet, some 3 years back, or 2 years back, another one was taken. Leah Sheribu was taken, and until today, no news about her. In fact, a whole school was invaded. About 90 or 100 girls were taken. She alone was singled out because she's a Christian. The others were Muslims. The rest were brought. She, until today, has not been released by the captives.
Was she a member of your church?
No, okay. It's farther north.
Farther north.
From
okay.
where we are.
Okay.
That's farther north from where we are.
Got time for a couple more. Is there McCoy over there? Hey, Amanda, repeat that question. I didn't hear it. Relay it for us. Is it difficult for Christians to find employment?
Yeah, in the cold northern states of Nigeria, where the Muslims are in the majority. Now, but I told you, every state in Nigeria has Christians. But where the Muslims are in the majority, they deny the presence of those Christians. They don't ever talk about them at all. And so they deny them employment. Where they happen to find one, promotion becomes a big problem. They will never get to the peak of their career because of, persecution, religious persecution.
All right, one more question. Is that Fox over there? How good, you said? Was that your question? He said, how good is the Nigerian education system?
Well, once upon a time it was good. Today it is not. It's been so bastardized because of politics, When you do not give the management of education to the right people, you can never have the best of it. It's been so politicized that the Minister of Education in Nigeria in the past 4 years is someone who never read education. He was never trained as a teacher. Now, so if you don't have experience, it's difficult for you to know what must be done. So the quality of education in Nigeria has been thoroughly watered down. It's no more as it used to be.
Well, thank you. Let's spend some time in prayer and... Boy, could I just pick some people? Would y'all be Susan? Would